I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show.
We're actually going to start with a review of Star Trek Picard. We're going to start spoiler-free. So what that means is we're not going to divulge any important details that actually happen during this particular episode. We're just going to focus on general impressions of the show. We might discuss something that obviously was in the trailers, but we're not going to give away any major spoilers during this portion of the show. Please, commenters, please comment, chime in, tell us what you thought of the particular episode as well. We were dying to hear your opinion. But please avoid any spoilers until we enter the spoiler portion. When we enter the spoiler portion, you'll see the word spoilers coming across the bottom, or you'll see me in this weird mask say, hey, we're going to do spoilers now. But please refrain from spoilers until that point. All right, so we're going to start off by talking about this episode. This is Star Trek Picard. It's Et in Arcadia Ego Part 1. I'm not sure even how to pronounce that, to be honest. I'm not even sure what it's referencing. to me, this is just episode 9 of the first season of Picard. So tell me, Erica, what were your general impressions of this almost finale episode of Star Trek Picard?
Wait a second. It's Et in Arcadia. I thought it was E.T. in Arcadia. E.T. so I guess I guess I totally screwed it up there.
I don't know. I don't know what the heck it is.
That's just a stupid joke. I think right off the bat, I think these titles are getting very, very pretentious. Okay, very, very pretentious. And that's kind of what the show has become in a lot of ways to me. This particular episode, I don't know exactly how I feel about it. I feel like my constant criticism is still kind of there. There's an unequal pacing to this show. And there are spots in it where I'm just all like, can we just do something? Can we just go somewhere? Can we just do something and stop talking, please? Because it seems so unnecessary. And I don't really like hearing your voices at this point. And can we just move on with the story? And then, of course, you know, this particular episode was not very heavy on any action of any kind. It was heavy on drama. There were some dramatic moments. Absolutely, there were some dramatic moments. But some of the other moments, I think, kind of messed those dramatic moments up because they were just kind of silly to me. Katie says, so many Latin titles, Siobhan. Yes, because he's a Pulitzer Prize winning author, right? And he needs us all to know that. He needs us to know he's a Pulitzer Prize winning author, you know? So he's got to show his chops, right? Even though, again, we have some pretty cringeworthy dialogue in this episode. And that's also another constant criticism I have is, yes, we have a Pulitzer Prize winning author who is the showrunner of this show and one of the writers on this show, and yet we still have incredibly cheesy dialogue and things that just don't make any logical sense. Once again, I did watch The Ready Room, which I have to say, I don't have anything against Will Wheaton personally. I've met him a couple times. He was nice to me. But he is starting to get on my nerves. Okay. And as much as I'm kind of looking forward to the end of Star Trek Picard, I'm kind of looking forward to the end of The Ready Room as well. But he did interview the actress who played Soji, who plays Soji Dash. It was kind of interesting. She said something that I'm going to get into a touch upon in the deep dive. That again, that's one of the reasons I watched The Ready Room, is because you get these little kernels of truth and these little interesting tidbits. It's almost like they let things slip and you're almost all like, how did nobody catch that? I don't know. Maybe there's some people, you know, in the Star Trek Picard production offices that kind of realize there's some problems here. So they kind of just let it slide for those of us that kind of can know. Yeah. There are issues here. There are logical issues here. Again, I feel like the show is a little uneven. The pacing was my biggest problem. Again, I had some moments where I was all like, can we just get on with it already? You guys are kind of just talking too much and I don't feel like this is going anywhere. Let's get somewhere. And then the other side of it is we have things that happen Like there's kind of a sort of a bombshell moment early in this episode, and they just gloss right over it, and nobody seems to care, and they don't make a big deal about it. Even though it's a big deal to the fans, and it's a big moment on screen, they act like it's just, okay, so this is just a thing now, and we're just moving on. So that's kind of where I'm at with Star Trek Picard. What about you, Dave?
So I just want to start by saying, yes, James, you did make it. How do I put into words my initial impressions? I am ready for the finale. How's that? I really wanted to like this show. Yes, James, I mentioned earlier, someone said that I need to be wearing a mask. I think I'm doing this wrong, but they said I needed to protect myself. So I assumed my identity, but then I introduced myself at the beginning. So it's kind of pointless and stupid. But I'm going to continue to wear the mask because I do feel more protected with it on. So that joke is going to get so old. Anyhow,
David, you're not doing it any worse than the people that I saw in the supermarket today.
So. Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go. I want to like this show. I really do. I was kind of looking forward to the reveal in this particular episode. Obviously, we're not in spoilers, so let's not get into that just yet. I was looking forward to the reveal. They kind of did a few things I kind of expected. They did a few things I did not. But overall, my general impression is I'm ready to get to the finale. And I'm ready to just, I hate to say this, I'm ready to be done with this show. I just am.
I have to say this. I kind of wonder, you know, like what exactly is going to happen in the next episode that we couldn't have had in this episode. It just seemed to me like we could have just wrapped everything up in this episode. And I don't feel like we're going to get anything bigger or any big, huge reveal in the next one. You know, they could obviously I could be wrong, but that's my feeling. Is my feeling is like whatever they're going to do in the next episode, it's going to be like, why didn't you just do that in the last episode? Because it would have made this episode so much better. Because to me, this episode felt like a lot of filler. There were some relevant things that happened to advance the story, but a lot of it felt like filler, and it felt like we're just kind of waiting for the actual good stuff to happen. You know what I mean?
Right. No. So, yeah. I mean, and it's just one of those things. I was looking forward to this, and it was a, like I said, a couple moments I genuinely liked. But then overall, I just feel like, you know, I'm good. I will say it again, and I know it's controversial, but I'm going to go ahead and say it again. Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery is a better show than Picard. In my opinion. Just telling you right now, it is a better, I'm just going to put it out there. So,
by the way, we do have another comment related to the mask. He said, it says, I saw someone using a jock strap as a mask at my local Stop and Shop. So I think you're doing a little bit better than they are.
Yeah, I was going to say that's also clearly not doing it right. So, in all honesty, Eric, that's all I've got to say about this episode.
It's hard to say much about it because it's just like in a lot of ways, I'm kind of very ho-hum about the episode. Again, you know, it's kind of actually a good segue, I think, into spoilers. It's like we have a very big moment in this episode and they treated it like nothing. They didn't treat it with any fanfare. Nobody was like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Even though I'm sure there were fans that were like, oh my God. You know what I mean? What's that? And then everybody else just kind of like, it's just a thing. It's just a thing. So is that a good segue into spoilers right there? So we can talk about the thing that's apparently just a thing and not a big deal.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and we'll get into spoilers. We are going to be talking about spoilers now for this particular episode of Star Trek Picard. So those of you in the Rogues Gallery, that means those of you that are commenting, feel free at this point. If you haven't seen this particular episode of Picard and you're wanting to watch the show, for example, right now, CBS All Access has actually made this show available to watch for free. So if you are interested in watching Picard and you do not want this particular episode spoiled because you might like this show, just because I didn't like it, that's just my own personal opinion. It doesn't count for you. You may actually quite enjoy the show. Please either drift away for a little while and hopefully come back later. But we're going to be talking about spoilers now. So yeah, let's go ahead and let's get into it. Erica, would you put Katie's comment up?
Yeah, that's perfect, actually. So Katie says, the show was named wrong. Should have been Star Trek Data, Star Trek Descendant, or Star Trek AI. And that's a perfect segue into spoilers, because you're exactly right, Katie. That's exactly what this. Those are much more appropriate names for this show. The show is not about Picard. I mean, that's very clear. It's not about Picard. And it's funny, you know, Brent Spiner, when he was at Star Trek Vegas last year, he actually made a joke about Patrick Stewart calling him and talking to him about the show and what the show is going to be called. And if people aren't familiar, Brent Spiner does a very good impression of Patrick Stewart. That's very funny with his accent, everything like that. And he talked about, you know, Patrick Stewart telling him the show is going to be called Star Trek Picard. You know, and he thought, you know, and of course, Brent Spiner, you know, says, well, I really thought it should have been called like Star Trek Data. You know what I mean? So,
and he has
in a lot
point.
Of ways that he has a point. And it's funny because nobody knew that at the time. People knew very little about what his involvement in the show was going to be. And everybody assumed he was just going to be Data and flashbacks, or maybe Data was coming back. Maybe they were going to do Data the way they did it in the original Countdown comic book series. You know, the one that was the spinoff of the prequel to the Kelvin timeline, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's really interesting. I shouldn't even say interesting. It's really weird, actually, I think, what they did and what they've done with Brent Spiner in particular. And of course, he's back. For anybody that doesn't know, you know, we are in spoiler territory. He's back in a new role as another son of Sung, He's another Sung. Of course, he's played multiple Sungs, right? He played one in Enterprise. He played the original Sung in the series, in the Next Generation series. Now he's yet another one. And we're going with the long lost son thing again. You know, once again, we have a descendant relative that we never knew about, was never talked about, but he exists. And apparently, you know, because apparently every Sung is a scientist and does like exactly the same thing. Yeah, that's totally believable. He's, of course, you know, into making androids and, you know, cybernetics or whatever it is that he's supposed to be into, because I don't think even the producers know at this point what they're talking about. They've gone into fantasy land. You know what I mean? It's just complete fantasy land. There's no basis in any kind of science or pseudoscience or anything anymore. It's just magic at this point. The thing that really irritated me was he's back. He's a new character. And they just act like whatever. There's almost no reaction to it. It's just like, this is a guy that looks exactly like Data, except as Data, if he had aged. They even say that. That's even part of the dialogue, as if that's not obvious enough. They have to say that.
Right.
And everybody just kind of like, oh, okay, that's cool. Let's move on now, right? It was such a non-event. You know what I mean? Yeah. Within the show, it was such a non-event.
And when he started to push his way through the crowd, and when I saw it was Brent Spiner, for half a second, I was so hoping he was going to say, Captain, and it was going to be Data in a biological, you know, maybe he didn't have like all of his memories quite intact, you know what I mean, because of this process, but that they had taken Data's memories and put them in to an organic android body, and Data was kind of back, because it could explain how he could age, it could explain how he could have emotions, you know what I mean? I'm kind of glad they didn't, because of what happens later in this episode. Because as things progress, I was like going, okay, well, is this really lore? You know, is this really a son of Sung, or is this lore? And I was kind of half hoping out, Eric, that your original theory that it was lore was going to come through.
Okay, Katie is saying that. She says, still saying he is lore or Data in disguise rebuilt by Maddox. I do not think so. I have seen that theory all over the internet. In fact, Dave, you even mentioned it to me, because that was my big hope. My big thing was, I thought it would be cool if we flipped the script on all this, and it turns out that Soji and Dodge are not Data's daughters, they are Lore's daughters, which would make a hell of a lot more sense. This one neuron, that's literally what the basis of this is, that they had one neuron from Data when he was blown to smithereens in Nemesis. And they have used this to create all the other synths. In fact, they say this in the Ready Room You know, in the Ready Room after show, the producers actually say this. They actually say, they explain that, yes, indeed, all the synths on this planet, they are from the one neuron of Data. They are all essentially Data's descendants, which makes absolutely no sense. And Akiva even said, it doesn't make any sense. You made it all up, but that's what it is. But the other reason I say that unfortunately my little thing is not going to happen is because one of the kind of central, well, I shouldn't say central, one of the plot points in this last episode was that this Sung is, it seems like he is dying or he's feeling the effects of his age. It's implied. And now he is going to use Agnes, who was, of course, Maddox's lover and, like, you know, right-hand person, to transfer his consciousness into an android body. In fact, the android body is already being produced. And this is in a lot of ways, I think this is a callback to a previous Star Trek episode. I can't remember the name of the episode, but there was a previous Star Trek Next Generation episode where Data encounters one of the mentors of Sung. And this mentor is dying, and he has discovered a way to transfer his memories to a computer. But when he meets Data, he realizes that he can actually transfer his consciousness to Data, and he does so. And Data, throughout that particular episode, he begins to change, and his personality is subverted by the personality of the scientist. So there is a precedent for this, because this has been done before. And so I think that's the direction that they're going to go. And that's why I think there's no chance that this guy's Lore, because if he was Lore, he would essentially be immortal. And it just wouldn't make much sense. He would be able to transfer himself because he transferred himself, obviously, originally into this biological body. So I don't think that's going to be the case, just because granted, they do a lot of stuff in here that doesn't make any sense. And I've pointed out examples where they violated their own continuity. They violate their own continuity in the show. Like, for instance, I pointed out that Dodge, when she's activated, knows to go to Picard and trusts him implicitly. That was established in the first episode. But when Soji is activated, Picard needs to earn her trust, and she assaults him, you know, pushes him, you know, and all that kind of stuff because he's such a jerk. Doesn't make any sense. They actually violated their own continuity within the series because that's what lazy writers do. I'll say it all the time. Continuity is the enemy of lazy writers. Doesn't matter what the project is, doesn't matter what it is. Writers hate continuity because it makes them work. And it's so hard to work and actually, like, make the story make sense, you know? It's just so hard. So hard to remember what I did in the last episode. I can't remember, you know, because it was so stupid. And we're moving on, right? So, you know, that's how I feel it is, you know? I will say it was interesting. This was the first episode that we didn't have a flashback for the teaser. I thought that was kind of interesting. Just something that I noted. What we got instead was pretty much worthless. What did you think of the flowers, Dave? Let's talk about the flowers. Is that like a high point in Trek for you? The killer flowers?
I didn't think the flowers were a high point. I honestly, the flowers didn't bother me too much. Only because, you know, during that period in which Trek was originated, you know, we're talking about the 60s, right? You get the peace movement, whatever going on. And sometimes there would be those science fiction, like, book covers that were really trippy. And they would have something really super organic, like that kind of an amorphous shape, you know, existing in space, right? It'd be an alien or an alien ship. It's a concept they actually played with actually in a really fun episode of actually the Star Trek animated series that Filmation did. So the flowers, in all honesty, they didn't really bother me. I thought it was a little unusual, but the choice didn't bother me too much.
I thought they were incredibly stupid.
Right. And I get that. I get that.
I don't understand how that makes any sense. Flowers in space. Literally, we're talking about giant flowers in space.
But here's the part.
And they call them flowers because they are so lazy. They couldn't even come up with some silly, stupid name to explain the fact that, no, they're not really flowers. You know, they're like space flowers or whatever. No, they just say they're flowers. In fact, they even ask Soji for some explanation because the way Raffi describes them is like orchids. She says, yeah, we pretty much just call them orchids.
But here's
we couldn't even come up with a technobabble name for them.
Let me explain the part about the flowers I don't like. Okay. The idea of the flowers doesn't bother me. I thought it was kind of interesting visually. The part that bothered me was we get down to the planet, right? And then we get to where these synth race is living. The rest of their technology doesn't fit with the flowers. Do you see what I'm saying? Like as a design theme, if the flowers somehow are,
I didn't see any real evidence of technology at all, except for Sung's lab. That was the other thing. Is there a bunch of hippies? So that's the flower power, right? They have power because they're a bunch of hippies. That really makes sense for a bunch of androids to be a bunch of hippies. It's not like they would have a technological culture, right? I mean, it's so disappointing to me because I used to kind of like fantasize about the idea of there being like, you know, a world of data like androids. And if there was tons of them, and what would a society be like if they were all AI, an all AI society? And they don't even try to do that. Instead, they just make them a bunch of hippies. They remind me of those guys that they used to be in airports. You know what I mean? And the like an airplane, you see them and stuff like that. They used to be in airports and come up and try to give you cards and make you join their cult. I mean, they look exactly like them. It's like, this is what an AI would do. This is what an AI would do. You know, it just didn't make any sense to me.
Go ahead.
I just want to acknowledge some people in the chat. Bobby's in the chat, and he said, just got home. Had to look twice. Love the mask, Dave. I think he thought maybe he was on the wrong show.
I could see that. It's probably a little jarring.
And Ayuko, who is my friend from hashtag All Star Trek, she said, I still haven't fully caught up with Picard. I'm just not motivated to watch. And I can totally understand that because I didn't watch this episode until the last minute last night. And I have to review it for the show. And I didn't want to watch it. I just did not want to watch it. And yes, you know, you said, I must have missed something big. Flowers. You know, laugh out loud. And yes, you did miss something big. The data planet, if you will, the planet of the synths, their defense system is a bunch of flowers. They're giant flowers that they shoot off into space and they devour starships. And it doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense whatsoever.
The only point I'm trying to make, Eric, is that if you take this idea that they have the technology to create these weird organic flower things that they can use to defend their planet, wouldn't their technology, again, following the idea that they are bio or organic synthetic beings, okay?
But they're not.
But
Soji is. But Soji is, but the rest of them aren't.
I know, but just follow. Wouldn't it make sense that when you get to their area in which they're living, shouldn't it design-wise reflect that concept? See, that's what I'm talking about. Like the flowers are completely out of context with the civilization we find on the planet. I get the whole hippie analogy.
Yeah, that's what I think. It's a hippie thing. I think that's exactly what it is. It's flower power. It's literally flower power because there are a bunch of hippies.
Right, but it does. That's what I'm saying. In my opinion, it doesn't work. If you take the technological society that could create something like that to use it as a defense mechanism, when you get to their city, their enclave, their colony, whatever you want to call it, right? That design work of that, the buildings, the clothing, you know, you should see other examples of that technology. Like they should have some crazy, amazing, advanced thing going on there that makes sense that they would be so powerful technologically that they could literally defend their planet with a flower and not be afraid.
No, I get what you're saying. It's like it if you're going to go that direction, then just go that direction and then just go all in with it. And I think it's just a bad idea to begin with because it doesn't make any sense. Ayuko mentions that the Orville did a great job of portraying in all AI society with Isaac. And that's what I would love to see, because that's what I liked. I thought that was really good. I have this problem with Trek in general, to be honest with you, with the exception of Brent Spiner himself, because I felt Brent Spiner did a really good job of depicting what an AI might be like, because he was different and he had no emotions. And therefore, he had to try his best to relate to humanity without having any emotions. And, you know, I give all credit to Brent Spiner and being able to do something like that. But the problem going forward with a lot of the AI characters in Star Trek is they don't act like AIs. They don't act like there's no thought into what an AI is. Instead, they just act like people. And we have the same problem in Star Trek Picard, where the synths are acting like stupid people. They're not acting like AIs. There's no attempt to make them like AIs. Try having a conversation with your Alexa. You know what I mean? And it's not, this doesn't have any kind of concerns. Alexa's voice is fairly warm, actually, you know, to me, you know, in terms of it's not super, like digitized, you know, robotic or whatever. But that's an example of a real AI. And that they're not, it's not like that. It's not like these characters. Now, Soji at least has a biological body. So it makes a lot more sense for her to maybe be the way she is. Maybe you could theorize that her positronic brain is able to process the hormones, the chemicals, all that stuff. The other synths don't have that. They're fully synthetic. And well, yet see, they act like humans. And it doesn't make any sense to me. And that's not just Star Trek Picard. That's a gripe I have for a lot of Star Trek in the way that they depict AI, because it's not AI. They're just like people.
Yeah, and that's kind of my other big complaint is that the promise of the idea of defending a planet with a flower versus the society that we find on the colony or whatever, it doesn't make sense. It gets even further complicated when they continue to reveal these different iterations or versions of these synthetic or androids that are all living together on the planet, because it makes, and then what I could go on about that forever. So let me just stop that right there. And let me just say this. What was Soji's mission? Could someone explain to me what in the hell Soji was doing in the first place?
No, they totally glossed over that. They basically just said it was just crazy Maddox. Maddox in his crazy ways, that was pretty much the explanation. Sung says at one point, says something along those lines, that crazy Maddox, I told him his crazy ways might not work out. That's their explanation. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't, that's what I'm saying, it doesn't make any sense. Soji didn't come back with any specialized knowledge. It's not like Soji learned from something from the Borg that they can use to improve their society. Right. It's not like they're trying to find a way to contact the Borg because they think they and the Borg, they're simpatico and they want to ally against the organics. Right. Like as I was watching the episode and Brent Spiner's character was talking about and then the other version of Soji, I can't remember her name, the gold colored one. And they're talking they're talking about her mission. And I'm like, what in the hell was her mission? Was her mission to reveal her planet to the Romulans so they would show up and kill them all?
Yeah, apparently that was her mission. No, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's just crazy. So Josh says, was this supposed to be a play off the Apple from the original series? I am terrible with the names of episodes in Star Trek. Dave, do you know what the Apple is from the original series?
I believe we're talking about the hippie episode.
Right, because they're trying to go to Eden. Oh, exactly. Yeah. They do kind of remind me, because obviously that episode was supposed to be about hippies. I remember the episode now. And this is supposed to be sort of a paradise, if you will, for the synths. Obviously, they live in harmony and peace. But I think it's only a very superficial similarity. I don't think there's no substance to it as far as there's no real connection. You know what I mean? Between like those people and the synths, you know what I mean? Like there's nothing there. Katie mentions that the flowers look like the ships from species 8472 and Voyager. And I do think they had kind of a resemblance to them, but again, I think that's just stylistic. I don't think that means that there's any connection between their technology and Species 8472. But I do see the resemblance. I do see what you're saying as far as the ships looking kind of similar. And I can't remember if Species 8472 had more of like a biotechnology, you know, or if they were, if that was kind of, I think that was kind of their thing, because I remember that was one of the problems with the Borg, was they couldn't interface with their technology properly. That was one of the reasons they were getting beat by them. So that'd be interesting if that is, that's something that pans out. Of course, one of the other big reveals of this episode is that we find out that the little twist or whatever is that the message that the Zot Vash, the Super Tal Shiar, found wasn't really meant for them. And the reason that they've been going crazy and the reason that the Borg cube broke is because biologicals can't process the information properly because it's meant for synths. The message is actually meant for synths. And of course, I'm going to call her the Data Soji, because she looks like Data. She has the skin tone like Data. And
I think it was Cetra or something like that was her name. I forget.
I don't really feel like I need to know her name. But anyway, she can mind meld because she has studied Vulcan texts. She's able to mind meld because apparently that's how mind melding works now. If you study the text, then anybody can do it, including an android. That's bad. That's magic. That's really bad, in my opinion. And anyway, she's able to mind meld with Agnes, good old Agnes, my favorite. Good old Agnes. She's able to get the information from her, and she's able to process it. By the way, I think Agnes is the definition, basically, of a psychopath, sociopath. This character is really effed up, like completely Looney Tunes. You know, we get to the point where we find out that this message is meant for the synths, and this message has not been sent by the organic culture that was destroyed. The message has been sent by the synths who destroyed them. So it is the Orville. These are the Kalons. I'm pretty sure they're the Kalons. They're going to call them like the Xylons or something like that. Because Siobhan, you know, I mean, it's going to be like the Xylons. You know what I mean? So these are the Kalons. It's exactly what happened in the Orville. It's exactly what happened in the Orville. Basically, there is this intergalactic federation of Kalons, and I'm going to call them Kalons, who have destroyed all the other galaxies, and they search for other synths because they know this is the cycle, which goes back to Battlestar Galactica. Everything that happened before will happen again. So they know at some point the biologicals will create synthetic life, and at some point they will hate the synthetic life. They will destroy the synthetic life. The synthetic life will fight back, and eventually the synthetic life will destroy all the organic life. Which, by the way, why do they have flowers if they hate organic life? Again, that I guess it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Who cares? So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But there is this intergalactic federation of synths. They sent the message. Now the synths, the Sung synths, now know about it. And the Data Soji has decided that she's going to, that's cool. Let's just murder all the organics because they want to hurt us and they're bad. And then Agnes decides to join with them. That was really nice. That was, I love that character. Agnes is my favorite. I think she's actually beat Raffi. Raffi was my favorite. You know, I think Agnes might be my favorite now.
I don't have a favorite. I'm just ready to be done. I mean, I see, and the thing that really gets to me is literally the whole time I'm watching the episode, I couldn't stop asking the basic question: what was Soji's mission? What in the hell was Soji sent out there to do? What was
There's a good comment here from Ayuko. She says, "I was suspecting that Soji was the bridge between biologics and sense, and she is a combo of both." And that's what makes sense. And that may still be the case. She's kind of, she has sided with the sense at this point, officially. She's turned on Picard. Picard did his little speech. And of course, he just came off like as a pathetic old man, as he always does in this show, because nobody cares, just bounces off him. And, she basically says, okay, you know, I'm going to go with my sister I'm going to, you know, we're going to destroy you all. But she doesn't seem happy about it. So I think it would be fairly easy to predict that she will intervene in some way to save Picard. I don't think Picard's going to die in the next episode. Although there is that theory. There's been that theory for the longest time that Picard will die in the last episode of this season. But I don't think he will, because for no other reason, because he invited Whoopi Goldberg to come on the second season. That's the only reason I really think that Picard will die. He might as well. He's so ineffective. You know, it's really sad. I mean, he gives this big speech, you know, talking about how he's going to help them and this is going to be different than what happened with the Romulans. Like, you know, and they even make fun of him. Like, they even say, you know, the Sung says to him, yeah, this is not, you're not going to redeem yourself. You know what I mean? That's not going to happen. You're just a tired old man. Just go away. You know what I mean? And that's literally what they do. They just take him away. We forgot to mention that the Borg cube was destroyed, except it wasn't destroyed. It crashed as well. And somehow, even though they said there was no way, Raff even said there's no way a ship like that anybody would survive, but they're all fine. Seven and then Elmore, right? Elmore. I always want to say Elrond. Yeah. And I should just say Elrond. Anyway, Elmore. they're fine. A bunch of the XBs were there chilling. They're fine. Even though this big cube thing fell out of the sky and crashed on the planet, it's still intact. And yeah, it's just, you know, physics, whatever, man. Come on, whatever.
Now all I've got is Hugo Weaving in my head saying, you shall be the Fellowship of the Picard.
Josh says I'm blaming everything on Q regarding any continuity issues. It's a little snap of the fingers, right? You know?
Yeah. It would be great, like, if all of a sudden Picard's in a white room and he turns around and it's John DeLancey and he goes, "Oh, you've made a mess of this now, haven't you, Picard?" It's like, "Don't worry, I'll fix it for you," and he snaps his fingers, you know. That would be kind of fun, but they're not going to do that. So my official opinion of this episode is I still don't understand what Soji's mission was. It doesn't make any sense. I'm ready for the finale because I'm ready to be done. I never imagined there'd be a time with a Star Trek show where I was just so ready for it to be over. I don't understand what they're trying to do. I really don't. Like, even if they're trying to send like a social message or something, or they're trying to comment on society, like,
I want to call that out. If this is this is supposed to be analogous to Brexit, the wall, to the plight of the Syrian refugees, epic fail dealing with any of those topics in any kind of a serious way that is in any way truly analogous to those issues and actually deals with them in any kind of a complex manner that actually shows an argument for both sides. You know, I've made the point that, for instance, people will talk about the role of this kind of contemporary commentary in Star Trek and the original series. And for instance, there's an episode of the original series, I think you can help me with the name, Dave, where it's about Vietnam. It's basically about Vietnam. And it's very clearly about Vietnam. And the situation that's going on is basically that the Federation and the Klingons have essentially allied themselves with two factions on this planet. One faction is basically sort of becoming like they're basically like farmers. They live in towns. The other faction are more nomadic and they live like in tents and they're basically hunters. And the hunters have a relationship with Kirk because Kirk surveyed this planet years ago. And the leader of the hunter people know about Kirk. They trust Kirk, that kind of a thing. He comes back. The Klingons have basically started arming the farmers and arming them with flintlocks, and are starting to massacre the hunters to take over the planet for the Klingon Empire. And it's very much about Vietnam, because what happens is Kirk decides, well, we got to help the hunters because we got to equal this out. You know, this is not a situation for the Prime Directive, because the Klingons are clearly involved And this has become like a strategic thing. And they're going to, we let them do it here, they're going to do it other places. So we got to stop them here. It's very much about Vietnam. And what I really like about the episode is it never takes a clear side about whether Vietnam was right or wrong. Instead, what it does is it frames the argument and it shows what a crappy situation that was. And it shows the argument of, yes, we need to do something and we need to arm the hunters versus, you know, just leave them alone and they're going to be massacred by the town people, by the farmers. And it, and the conclusion of the episode really leaves you with, there's no good choices here. There's really no good choices here. You're kind of screwed. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. So rather than being anti-Vietnam or pro-Vietnam, whichever way you were at the time, you could watch the episode and you could come away with something. You could come away with a line from Kirk or a line from Spock. Like, for instance, I remember Spock kind of saying, hey, we basically have destroyed paradise. This was paradise and we've destroyed it. You know what I mean? And at the same time, there's also this element of what else can we do? What else can, should we just leave them to their devices, even though the Klingons are clearly interfering? You know, there were no good choices. That was my point. And that's what I liked about that episode is you could come away with whatever perspective you had and you come away with something. This doesn't even address the issues. It doesn't even come close to addressing the real issues involved with Brexit or the wall or the plight of the Syrian refugees. It doesn't even come close. It doesn't even come close. And it is so disappointing and it is so like paper thin in terms of this idea that they're addressing these complex social issues. They're not. This story doesn't address those issues in a way that frames it in a way that's actually relevant to our society.
Are you talking, is it a private little war?
Yes, I think that's the one. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Joss got it too. He said episode, a private little war. By the way, your sound went down, Dave. I don't know if other people can hear it, but your sound went way down.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, I think you got a little bit of a mic issue.
Oh, okay. All right, well, vamp, and I'll see if I can figure out what's going on.
Ayuka said, if Seven got together with Holodoc, none of this would have happened. That was a recent episode on the Heroes and Icons. They had the episode where Seven learns about dating from the Holodoctor on Voyager. I don't know if people remember that episode, but that was recently on the rotation on Heroes and Icons. And yeah, that would have fixed everything. You know, if Seven had just gotten with the Doctor, right? Then we'd be all good. Seven would be happy. You know, she would be kind of just, you know, chilling out with the Doctor and everything would be good. Oh, this is interesting too. Katie says, if Janeway would not have changed the timeline in Endgame, so Chakotay and Seven had a good future, none of this would have happened. That's an interesting perspective there. It also kind of, you know, Picard kind of messes up that whole idea, doesn't it? The whole idea that Janeway went back in time more than anything because she wanted to save Seven, because Seven died in the previous timeline. And Chakotay was heartbroken and basically, we're kind of told, died of a broken heart, essentially. And Janeway couldn't live with that. And that's why she decides to change the timeline. And apparently that was all meaningless. That doesn't mean anything. Because guess what? Seven is miserable. And and no Chakotay. No Chakotay.
is that any better? Can you hear me better now?
Yes, much better. Much better.
Okay. All right. Okay. I don't know what caused that, unfortunately. I don't know.
We do have a comment that they said that they were hearing you fine. So I guess it was just me. I don't know. That was weird. So
yeah, there's nothing weird going on tonight. I'll be honest with you, Eric. I don't have much else to say about this episode. For me personally, I'm just ready to get to the finale. I'm ready to be done. I'm ready to move on to something else.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Five Then Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.